Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is crimes. Each of my guests will explain a crime, whether it's against humanity, the economy, or ourselves. My first guest is a doctor who helps us battle our crimes against ourselves. She views anxiety as the key to a four-step solution for changing bad habits and ending unhealthy thinking. We'll explore her thesis from her book, You Are Not Your Brain. My second guest tackles an ugly side of the humanity. She exposes the unseemly side of the foster care system and what happens to children who are extremely at risk. We'll blow open the extreme downsides of foster care from her book, The Gray Zone. My third guest is a Yale economist who examines the booms and busts in the first decade of the 21st century and posits that they can be identified and resolved. We'll look back at the roller coaster ride over the past decade from his book, Boom Bustology. And if you want to join in the conversation or if you want to call in and ask a question, you can always call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Dr. Rebecca Gladding, is a clinical instructor and an attending psychiatrist at UCLA Stuart and Linda Resnick Neuropsychiatric Hospital and the Seminole Institute for Neuroscience and Human Behavior. She graduated from UCFF School of Medicine, completing her psychiatry residency at UCLA, and spent 6 months at the University of Washington as a psychosomatic fellow. She was featured in the A&E Television Network's critically acclaimed series, Obsessed. Dr. Gladding believes that anxiety is a helpful signal, often alerting us to the deeper emotion that is trying to reach the surface. Dr. Gladding focuses on teaching people how to recognize anxiety and use it to identify erroneous negative thoughts, i.e. deceptive brain messages, so that they can uncover and express their true emotions. Dr. Gladding has been working with Dr. Schwartz since 1998. Together, they co-authored the book, You Are Not Your Brain, The Four-Step Solution for Changing Bad Habits, Ending Unhealthy Thinking, and Taking Charge of Your Life. Welcome to the show, Dr. Gladding. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy Brain. I do love to talk to thought leaders such as yourself. So let's begin at the beginning, shall we? Differentiate for my listeners between the brain and the mind. And in what ways do deceptive brain messages keep us from our true selves?
Okay. So the basic idea is that the brain is generating this passive side of experience. It's generating these initial thoughts, urges, and impulses, but they're not really representative always of who we are or the life we want to lead. And this is why the concept of the mind is so important. The mind allows us in a very active way to decide what's important to us, what our true goals and values in life are, and then align our actions with those goals. And so we use concepts like true self, which again is about your goals and values, and this concept called the wise advocate to help people look from a very rational and caring perspective how to take care of themselves. And so the central idea in the book is you are not your brain. And what we're really telling people is although these thoughts are bubbling up and you have no control over the initial thought, you do have control over how you act, and you actually can rewire your brain to work for you rather than against you.
All right. Now, rewiring the brain, that sounds fairly technical. Of course, it's perfect for brainstorming with Billy the Brain. But give us, if you will, Dr. Gladden, give us a practical example of what you say, because that all sounds very theoretical coming from UCL Medical School and all that. But tell me more practically, give us an example of how this might bubble to the surface in an average individual.
Sure. So say that someone has a propensity to, you know, doubt themselves, to really think that if someone makes a comment, it means something negative about them. What they can do is they can recognize that although they may have that initial kind of painful moment and automatically assume it's about them, they actually can use our four-step method to break the habit of overthinking and overanalyzing. You know, the same mechanism in the brain that teaches you or that allows you to learn how to ride a bike also works for these habits of overthinking or things that are, you know, less serious but bothersome in your day, like constantly checking your smartphone or your email, over snacking, things like that.
All right. Well, Dr. Gladden, what is the role of these uncomfortable sensations and how are they a precursor to knowing that there's a deeper underlying problem?
Well, what happens often is that people aren't aware of their initial thoughts, their urges, whatever, but they often can become acutely aware of how uncomfortable they feel. It could be something like an anxiety sensation where they're feeling butterflies in their stomach or they're nervous or they're sweating, or it could be something, just a sense of unease, a feeling of fatigue, of low motivation, or a strong craving, an urge to do something that's really not going to be beneficial to you. So we spend a lot of time teaching people how to notice those physical and emotional sensations, because often then you can work back from that and figure out the thought or the underlying premise that got you to that place.
All right. We're talking to Dr. Rebecca Gladding, her book, You Are Not Your Brain. So let me give you a real-world example, and I'll use myself as the guinea pig, Dr. Gladding, in this. I really intensely dislike going out on sales calls and talking to advertisers or potential advertisers. And, man, I find 100 different ways of avoiding this, procrastinating on it. And one of the symptoms that I notice is whenever I know that I should be going out on sales calls, I get hungry and I want to go eat something, whether it's something salty or something sweet, it doesn't really matter. I essentially head to the kitchen. So talk to me about that. The feeling that I get is hunger. And in what ways is this tied into, if it is at all, to my fear of going out and making sales calls?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. You're talking about, there's actually a few things going on in what you're talking about. The first thing is you're avoiding something, and as that urge to avoid something kind of gets stronger, your body, it sounds like, has learned to go eat, to generate this craving for hunger so that you can distract yourself from going out and doing what you need to do. The way we would teach someone to work with this with our four steps is we would have them use step one, relabel, to say, there's that avoidance again. I mean, relabel really is about calling things what they are and becoming unaware of the process. And so you literally would just say to yourself, oh, there's that avoidance again, or here comes that hunger urge, and that's all that step is about. Then step two, reframe, is where you would say to yourself, oh, this is happening because I don't want to go deal with these sales calls. And my brain has learned that when I'm avoiding, it's going to generate this urge to eat so that I can avoid what I'm doing. And the real crux of the method is to use step three, refocus, to do the behavior that you need to do. In this case, go make your sales calls while allowing that sensation of hunger to be present. The real key is that the refocus step is what changes your brain, because attention, well, it's technical, but attention is what actually changes your brain and what prioritizes which actions will be used over and over by your brain in a very unconscious way, a rote way. And then the fourth step is revalue, which you really say to yourself, this is nothing but the feeling of wanting to avoid something. This is not something I have to take seriously, and I don't have to go eat something right now. Instead, I can go make my sales calls, and if I'm still hungry 15 minutes later or half an hour later, then I'll go eat something.
All right, we're talking to Dr. Rebecca Gladding, and just to let me recap, if I can, please, the four steps in your system are relabel, reframe, refocus, and revalue. I mean, I get it. At an intellectual level, I understand that. But the biggest leap of faith, Dr. Gladding, is that one between step one and step two, the relabel and the reframe. Because I may, in my case, the one that we just used, I may understand that, okay, here comes that hungry feeling again. I'm avoiding something. But I may not be able to decide or determine what it is that I'm avoiding, because in everybody's busy day-to-day life, they have two or three things that is on that are on their mind at any given time. So how do you really identify, once you know that the hunger is there, for example, how do you identify what the hunger really is a symptom for?
Well, and again, this is something we spend a lot of time in the book going through, but you really start to ask yourself, what am I about to go do and why? And as you do this, you'll realize, you know, or you ask yourself, what is it that I really need to be doing right now? And, you know, reframe is not that necessarily that complicated. I mean, you could just reframe the hunger and say, I'm not really hungry right now, but I'm going to go do something that's beneficial for me. So, you know, with time and with practice, you can identify the why of the avoidance. But even if you can't do that in every single instance, you can at least work with the fact that you're having this hunger, this craving, but that it's not going to be beneficial for you to go act on it right now.
All right, but you get to the crux of the problem, don't you, Dr. Gladding, that certain things, and in this example, my hunger, becomes a habit. And habits are hard. I mean, they're formed over a long period of time. They're hard to break. So talk to me, what goes into making a habit, whether it's a good habit or a bad habit, and again, how your self-directed neuroplasticity is really the solution for this?
Sure. So habits are formed by how you focus your attention. And it's complicated, you know, neuroscience. It involves some quantum mechanics. But the bottom line is that what you focus your attention on teaches your brain that that action is important. The more you repeat that action, the stronger the brain circuit becomes. And if you think about riding a bike, you know, as a physical example, this makes perfect sense. Think about the first time you tried to ride a bike. You were wiggling all over the place and you couldn't really do it. But the more you practiced it and the more repetition you had, the easier and easier that action became. The same thing happens in our brains with thoughts and all kinds of other habits. When we repeatedly respond to the same kind of stress or the same kind of situation in the same way, we teach the brain, this is how you deal with the situation. And if we're not paying attention, then the brain just will automatically respond that way each time the same situation presents. And that's basically how any habit is formed.
All right. We're talking to Dr. Rebecca Gladding, author of the book, co-author of the book, You Are Not Your Brain, the four-step solution for changing bad habits, ending unhealthy thinking, and taking control of your life. And I want to come back, Dr. Gladding, to the bike example, because this is something that has fascinated me for a long time, and that is bike riding. You know, you learn to ride a bike as a child, and many adults just put down a bike and don't pick up a bike again until many years later in their life. But the interesting thing is that once you pick up that bicycle and you jump on it, you can start riding that bicycle and away you go. There's really no relearning curve that has to happen there. Whereas if you learn how to drive and you let that go for a while and you jump back into the seat of a car and try to drive, there is some relearning that has to go on in that automobile. What is the difference brain-wise between the riding of the bike and the driving of the car?
Well, I think the main difference is that riding a bike is very simple and it doesn't require a lot of mental effort and attention. I mean, it's very physical. You have muscle memory. You have the brain pathways already in there. There's not a lot you have to do. Whereas with driving, you have got to pay attention to all of these other things that are happening while you're physically driving the car. And I think that's what makes it more complicated.
Okay. Well, that's a very cogent answer to that question. Thank you very much for that. And another follow-on question, back to what you said about habits being formed by how you focus your attention. It's interesting that the science is just catching up to some of the literature that has been around now for more than a century. And specifically, I'm thinking of the William James book, As a Man Thinketh. That came out in 1906 and basically said what you focus on is what becomes important and what becomes your habits. And here we are over 100 years later, and the science is proving that fact that we discovered a long time ago. Talk to me about, you know, some of the old wives' tales that are out there that apply to habits and apply to healthy thinking that we have just sort of taken for granted as old wives' tales, but science is starting to prove them true.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting kind of thing to think about. I mean, I think, you know, there's some conventional wisdom. You know, I remember going and, you know, having eaten dinner as a little kid and then saying to my mom, I'm hungry, I want a snack. And she would say, okay, well, wait 15 minutes and see if that urge is still there. And, you know, lo and behold, 15 minutes later, it likely wasn't still there. And, you know, these are things that people have known for years, but that we hadn't been able to really kind of watch how the brain worked and how we could really let these things go with time. You know, I'm trying to think of other specific examples for you, but I think the main one that people have said is that you can change habits. And, you know, now the science is actually showing that through neuroplasticity and specifically self-directed neuroplasticity, which means where you focus your attention can change your brain, that we really do have the power to change our habits in a very real way.
And how long does it take to change a habit, Dr. Gladding? Because I've seen different reports that it takes 30 days, it takes 21 days. Some people say that they can change a habit in a matter of minutes. How long does it really take to change a habit?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It really depends on how long the habit has been there and how strongly it's wired into the brain. And that's why you're seeing these different reports of 21 days, 30 days, a day, et cetera. I mean, if it's something that's not very strongly wired into your brain, hasn't been around for a long time, you can probably change it relatively quickly, perhaps on the order of days. But if this is something you've been doing your whole life and the brain circuitry is deeply entrenched, it's going to take more time to really change that.
Got it. We're talking to Dr. Rebecca Gladding, author of the book, You Are Not Your Brain. Dr. Gladding, what do you want readers to take away from reading You Are Not Your Brain?
Well, what I really want them to get from it is that they are so much more than what these, you know, thoughts and urges and impulses are telling them that they are. I mean, what I love about the book is that it's very empowering and it gives people a way to navigate through the world and through life. We're not just giving people skills or coping strategies, but we're teaching them through some of these concepts like the wise advocate and true self, how to approach themselves, how to take care of themselves, and define what really matters to them.
I think that is great. We've been talking to Dr. Rebecca Gladding, co-author of the book, You Are Not Your Brain, The Four-Step Solution for Changing Bad Habits, Ending Unhealthy Thinking, and Taking Control of Your Life. And Dr. Gladding, if people want to learn more about you, they like the sound of your voice, they like what you're saying, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
The best place to start would be the website's the book's website, which is www.youarenotyourbrain.com.
Youarenotyourbrain.com. That's the best place to go. Dr. Gladding, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll be talking to you down the road.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care.
You too.